Tonight's shir, Parshas Balosha. Yaskin Aaron. Rashi says, Lagid Shifcho Shel Aaron Shaloshina. Famous question, many, many answers to. What was the big deal that Aaron didn't change? He did what he was supposed to do. Of course, Aaron was going to do what he was supposed to do. He was going to do different. What's the Chiddush? Lagid Shavach of Aaron, he didn't change, didn't do different. Rav Meir Miparmishlan, he says that one idea that even though Aaron had such a chashuv job of lighting the menorah, so another person would have gone to his head and been haughty and say, "Oh, look at me, I'm lighting the menorah." But the Sheva Chazal, Loshina, means he did it simply, didn't make him into a haughty person just because he had the job of lighting the menorah. So, Maisa shows what humility is. That there was a father and a son that showed up at the yeshiva of Rav Rosen in Petach Tikva, or Yisrael in Petach Tikva. And the father didn't look like he was firmest of people. And he was with his son, and this was on Rosh Chodesh Elul. The Rosh Yeshiva was there, and they said to Rosh Yeshiva, "My son would like to come learn this yeshiva." So Rose is like, "Yeah, very nice, but we already have all the student list, it's ready, complete." And so the father said, no, you have to understand, we were sent here by Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach." So what's the story? So what happened was is that this boy was learning in like a modern type school, yeshiva high school, whatever. And afterwards he wanted to learn in a yeshiva kedosha, regular yeshiva. And the father wasn't so happy about that. He wanted the kid to learn professional, whatever it might be. So they got into an argument, and they decided they're going to go to Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach to decide whatever he says, that's what we're going to do. Fine, so they spoke to Rav Shlomo Zalman, and of course, he sided with the boy. He thought, wonderful, he wants to learn yeshiva, it's great. So he thought that the best place for him would be Rav Rosen's yeshiva, or Yisrael. And so therefore he sent him that the boy should learn. Fine, so that was the story behind this. And the father says to Rav Rosen, he says, "Listen, Rav Shlomo Zalman told us that to tell you that, to ask if you can accept the boy. And if you have any questions about it and you, you don't believe that he really said that, Rav Shlomo Zalman gave me his personal number, his private number, nobody has, that you can speak to him if you don't believe that, he sent us here." And then he continued and said an unbelievable thing. Then the father continues and he says, "And then Rav Shlomo Zalman also told us to tell you that just in case, if you don't know who he is, Rav Shlomo Zalman is, he told us to tell you that he was Menachem Avol when you were sitting shiva for your father or whatever, he was again." So he brings, he says the humility of Shlomo Zalman, like, who doesn't know Shlomo Zalman Orbach? Rosh Hashiva here, a guy off the street, Rosh Hashiva in Petach Tikva, he doesn't know Shlomo Zalman Orbach? He really thought, he doesn't know me, who am I? I'm just Shlomo Zalman Orbach. He doesn't know me, so you better tell him I was by Menachem Avol. That's real humility. It says in the pasuk, "Bnei Katz lo nasa and ki avodas hakodeshim b'kasev yitzav." That Bnei Katz, they were not given shvarim, cows, to carry their things. It says b'kasev yitzav, they carry the aron on their shoulders. Rav Greinemann in the Sefer Chafetz Chaim on the Torah, he brings the name of Gadol Echad, a pshat over here. That why was it that Moshe Rabbeinu did not want to give the cows to Bnei Katz? God, they're the ones that carry the Aaron, he said. And as we know, the Aaron is Noses Nosav. Right? Whoever carried the Aaron was not, the Aaron carried him. So Mele, he didn't want to give them Shvarim, cows. Why? Because if they're going to put the Aaron on the cows aren't going to carry the Aaron. The Aaron is going to carry the cows. It's not Kavadik that the Aaron, of course, is going to carry cows. So Mele said, that's why I didn't give him. Brings here a story of a young boy who the Lev Lachim, they were makarav the boy, and he had a tremendous desire to learn. He really wanted to learn. Whenever he had a chance, he would go to the Beis Medrash. Now his father, he was makura, his father was not from, and he wasn't interested in his son going to learn. He wanted to go to sports, whatever, basketball, football, whatever. So the son used to say, okay, I'm going to the, you know, go to play basketball, see you later, dad, you know. And then instead of going to the court, he would go to the base medrash, shul, whatever, to learn. So one day the father said, I don't know, something, I can't believe he's going every day to the basketball court. Something's telling me that's not the case. So the father decided to check it out. So he goes to the court or whatever, nothing, acts around, nobody knows he saw his son, finished. So he goes, I knew it. So what did he do? He's made his way straight to the shul. He says, I bet he's a boy, is he going to get it from you? You know, he's going to the shul instead of the court. So he's all angry and he's making his way to the shul. Just then, one of these boys' friends saw the father coming, you know, and he goes up to him in the shul. He goes, your father's coming, and he's angry at you, and what do you... So the boy said, oh my, what am I going to do? So he goes, I got to hide. So he was looking, where can I hide? Where am I going to hide in the shul? Where am I? So what did he do? He says, oh, the only place he thought of, his father's stomach, not going to look, is where? In the Aron HaKodesh. He opens the Aron HaKodesh, jumps in the Aron, closes it. And so the father, sure enough, comes in, looks all over where, and under all the chairs and other things, whatever. Doesn't think of looking, of course, in the Aron, and he leaves. So he was saved. So they afterwards, though, the boy had misgivings. He said, maybe it wasn't right, you know, you're going to Aron HaKodesh, you know me. I don't think that was the, maybe I shouldn't have done that, not proper. So they asked the Shaila if, in fact, if this was okay or not to do. So the answer that was given is that it was okay. That's, I mean, if you find a better place to hide, you know, but... why? Because we see that when if you're doing things in order to keep the Torah going, you know, to mechabe the Torah, then you can do it sometimes in a way which is not such covetic to the Torah. A couple of examples he brings, right? The Shulchan Aruch says that let's say you have a Sefer Torah with you and you're traveling and you're afraid the goyim are going to come and do something bad to the Torah, take it and, you know, destroy it or whatever. So it's fair to Shulchan Aruch, you're allowed to take the Torah and sit on it. You put on your seat and sit down on the Sefer Torah to hide, you know, hide it from the goyim. Is that covered the Torah? No, but it is, because you're doing that, so the Torah shouldn't get defiled. Another example is if you find a Sefer Torah lying around on the street on Shabbos, right? So you're not supposed to carry on Shabbos, but it's a bizayin to the Sefer Torah. So what are you allowed to do? I take the Torah and wrap yourself in it. Put it on wrap yourself in the Sefer Torah. Is that covered the Sefer Torah? No, but it's for the honor of the Torah, so you're allowed to do it. So he says the same thing over here with the boy. You know, why was he hiding in it? So that he can learn the Torah. He'd be able to keep the Torah. But it was the way of, you know, avoiding his father. So he was, quote unquote, mevazeh the Torah in order to keep the Torah. So sometimes if that's not the only way necessary, you can do so. It brings the maisa with the some bachrim from the Vardak. Shiva and the Vardak, that they were once held in prison by the Russians, and more hungry than they were for bread and water, etc., they were hungry for Torah, and they had no svarim, and they wanted to learn. So what did they do? They tried to think, how can they have to somehow get a Sefer Kodesh there, in there, some Gemara, something, in order to be able to learn. So they had an idea that they were, the authorities allowed every day a piece of cheese to be brought into the prisoners. A piece of cheese. So what was the idea? That the people from the outside were sending a piece of cheese, they would take a blat Gemara, they were learning as the time before they were taken captive, learning Makos, 23 blat. So fine, so take a blat of Gemara, rip it out of the Gemara, wrap the cheese in it, and send the thing. The Sama kind of think that they're what the Jews are wrapping Gemara, the cheese and Gemara, they're going to do such a thing, you know. And meanwhile, that's what they did. Every day, another piece of cheese in the Gemara, until they got the whole Maseches Makos, and they were able to learn it there. So the question was, they asked to get to the Chafetz Chaim at the time, was that okay to do? You know, you're wrapping these oily cheese inside that got black Gemara. So the answer was, again, yes, since that's how they upkeep the Torah, and they want to learn the Torah, so you're allowed to do these things. Agav, he brings interesting thing, it shows you, you know, what the das of the Torah is, not necessarily the das of your average person. He said, if you would ask somebody, fine, in such a situation, let's say you're allowed to take the daf of Gemara, what's preferable to use? A brand new Gemara? Fresh Gemara, just came off the printing press, use that, rip the pages out of that and wrap the cheese in? Or an old beat up Gemara? What would you say? So you ask your average guy on the street, of course he'll tell you, of course, use the old Gemara. What are you going to use a brand new Gemara for? You know, of course. But the answer is no. Use the old one. Use the new one. Why use the new one? And because in brand new Gemara, people haven't learned from yet. So it doesn't have so much Kedusha to it. It hasn't been learned with. But a Gemara has been learned through, and it's all torn up from you. So that's been used a lot. So that has a little more Kedusha in it. And Mela, you should use the new Gemara, not the old. Taich in the Pasuk, Piremis, we'll see, says a guy by the Korban Pesach. It talks about Pesach Sheni, when a person's Tame or far away and he can't get to the Beis HaMikdash. On the first Pesach, so he comes and brings a Korban Pesach Sheni. So the Pasuk says, Va'isha Sher Hu Tahor, Uvaderech Lohaya. However, a person in fact was Tahor, he wasn't Tame, and he wasn't Baderech Lohaya, and he could have come to the Beis HaMikdash, he could have brought the Korban, and he didn't, so he's Chayav Karis, the Pasuk says. So I'll Pidrash. Rabbi Uri, the Sraf of Starlesk, he says the following, that we can read the pasuk like this: Vaish asher hu tahor, who is a person that is really tahor? That's dafka person uvederech lohaya, a person that's not traveling. It's mele, person travels, he's not tahor. He sees things shouldn't see, hears things shouldn't see. You can't eat, you keep your kashrus to your level. When you're traveling, it's very hard to be 100%. Mele, Vaish Asher Hu Tahor, who is that? Ubederech Lohaya, someone who's not Bederech, who's not traveling. And the Gra says similar, he just puts the comma in a different place, and he says, you can read it like this: Vaish Asher Hu Tahor Ubederech, a person who's Tahor and Ubederech Lohaya. Never was such a thing. Never was a person that is Tahor Ubederech, that doesn't go together. You can't be Tahor Ubederech Lohaya. No such thing. Brings here Olmaisa with traveling. Says there was a Chashav Arav that was traveling from Eretz Yisrael to America, and he gets on the flight, big plane, 400 people, whatever, on the plane, and they show him to a seat, and he sees they dafka placed him between two women, should have sit between two women. So he tells the stewardess, whatever, he says, I'm sorry, I can't sit here. He says, what's wrong? I can't sit between two women, I'm sorry. So I just can't, I'm sorry. So they said, okay, we'll see what we can do, we'll try to arrange another. They said, da, da, da. They tried this, they tried that, nothing came up. They said, sorry sir, there's no other way, you just have to sit here. And he says, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to sit, I can't sit between two women. Anyway, so he just stood on the side, and he just said, wait until they can find something. And time's going, and people are getting itchy. The plane's supposed to leave, but they can't take off until he sits, because he can't take off with the guy standing there. But there's no, no one knows what's going to be. A big problem. So all of a sudden, they heard a voice from the back of the plane. And it was another Rav. And he calls out, and he says, wait, I think I have a solution. He says, oh good, what's going on? She says, my daughter over here that I'm flying with, she agreed that she'll take the seat between the two women, and Rav can sit next to me, fine. So he's, oh great, wonderful, Baruch Hashem, solution to the problem. So it's happened, the girl at first, when her father suggested it to her, was not so happy, because she wasn't living next to her father, some stranger. Why be sitting with strangers? It could be with your family, with your father, And so she wasn't so happy about it. But the father said, listen, it's a big mitzvah, he told, it's a big chesed, for everybody here on the plane, the plane can take off already, and you'll see, Hashem, I'll give you a bracha, if you do what's right. So she listened to her father, and she went, she sat there between the two women. Meanwhile, the Rav sat next to this Rav. And of course, they start talking and learning this and that. And mainly they speak about other things, this and that. So as it comes out, this the Rav that came, that was supposed to sit next to two women, sat next to him. He mentioned that he has a son that's an older son already and hasn't found a shidduch. And so the other Rav says, what about my daughter? And he says, wow, yeah, I see your daughter's a very good girl. And she left you and sat over there, whatever, it sounds good. Mela, when they came back to Israel eventually, and they made the shidduch, and the rest is history. And along the same lines, he brings that there was once a woman that she also couldn't find a shidduch, and she was 25, 30, 30, she was 38 years old, and she still hadn't found a shidduch. So one day she's visiting by her, one of her relatives. So they had a little kid, like a six-year-old kid. And the six-year-old kid looks up at her and says, oh, where's your husband? You know, he's a 38-year-old, you know. He says, where's your husband? So she says, Hashem wasn't, one day he'll hopefully help me find a husband. I don't have one yet. So the little kid, he says, well, why don't you give a donation to my cheder? And then you'll find a husband. So she said, you know what? It's Mina Shemayim. Why did the kid say this? So she says, okay, you got it. Sure enough, that was for, Shabbos. So Sunday morning, she sends a 200 shekel donation to the yeshiva. And shortly, a few days later, she made her b'sher. Okay. Interesting, Shaila. There was a going on the pasuk called Piyashem Yisu, traveling. So there was a family, a couple with three kids, whatever, and they had to get to this certain place, and they needed to take a taxi. So they hailed down a taxi, and they said, okay, can you take such a place? And he said, yeah, sure, come in. But then the taxi driver looked and said, wait a second. Parents and three cats, five people. He says, I'm only allowed to take, five, me and four, it's a five-seater car. So the father says, it's okay, we'll squish, He goes, no, I know you'll squish, but the taxi driver says, but it's against the law. And, I could be big trouble, if I get stopped by a cop, I have an extra passenger, and I'll get a big fine and points, and I'm sorry. So the father said, come on, do me a favor, I really have to. He says, no, I can't. Anyways, the father push until he said, okay, fine. So he said, the taxi driver said, but what if I get stopped and then again, I have to pay this huge fine? So the father said, don't worry, I promise you, if you get stopped and you get a fine, I'll pay the fine. I'll pay the fine for you, okay? So all the taxi driver says, okay, fine, you want to pay the fine, it's fine, okay. So he lets him in the car, enough for this guy, already fine, get in. So he gets in with his kids, whatever, and the taxi driver goes. What happens? He drives a little bit too fast. Instead of driving 100, he's driving 135 or something like that on the highway, and cop pulls him over. Apple's boy says, you've been 30 kilometers over the limit, whatever. Gives him a ticket, 750 shekels and points. So he's like, don't feel terrible, whatever. But then the cop says, it looks a little bit squishy there in your car. And he looks in and he starts, what's going on over here? You have five people. You only allow four people. He goes, he gives him another ticket for another 750 shekels and more points and whatever. And that's that. So the guy gets in, the taxi driver gets into his car, and he says, you see what happened? He says, so now, you have to pay me the 750 shekels, because the extra person, like you said. So the father says, I feel bad for you and everything, but I don't think I have to pay you. He says, what are you talking about? You said if I get, fine, you'll pay the fine. He says, yeah, but what? You only got pulled over because you were driving too fast. If you were driving normally, you wouldn't have gotten pulled over. And I went, it's all because it's your fault for driving fast. That's why you got pulled over. And then he noticed. So he claimed he didn't have to pay. So they brought the Shaila to Rav Aaron Leib Steinman. And he paskened that, in fact, the father was right, that he doesn't have to pay. Because he was pulled over it was his fault. He got himself into his own mess by driving too fast. However, Zilberstein says at the end over here that, needless to say, it was not proper what the father did to begin with. Forcing the driver to take them when it's too many people, and definitely not the right thing to do. And it can be a chilul Hashem, especially because they're from, and then not a good thing. But lemaisa, bottom line is that he doesn't have to pay the taxi for the fine. Also, the meaning of cars and things brings a maisa that runs Rav Vosner, Shmuel Vosner, the Gaibed of Zichron Meir in Bnei Brak, that he once went to a house to Menachem Avil. So he had a driver, drove him, thing, and then he parked and went out for a few minutes, whatever, Menachem Avil. As it happened, the driver, he had not parked in a great place, he was blocked the exit of a parking lot, whatever it might be, and there was a guy that wanted to get out, and the car was in the way, whatever, and so when the driver came down to get in the car, he started screaming at him, what are you doing, you're blocked away, you couldn't get out, whatever. You know, big fighting, the argument. So Rav Osner comes down, and right after that, and he sees that what's going on over here. So what does he do? He takes $100 out of his wallet, and he goes over to the guy, and he says, "Here, take $100." Mephias him. So he says that you see that you know, sometimes you have to, it's gedai to spend money to appease a fellow yid. Brings on the pasuk, Hashem diber tov al Yisrael, on the ending of diber tov, that speaking nice about a person, the ending of how sometimes you have to be malamed schus when it comes to speech also. For example, he brings a story that there was once a Rav, we'll call him Reuven, just for argument's sake, Rav Reuven, and he was visiting another city by Rav Shimon, we'll call him. Okay. So the Rav Shimon took him in as a guest for while he was there, and in the morning they went to Daven. So Rav Shimon, the host, took Rav Reuven with him, to Daven. And what happened was, during the Chazar Sashatz, the repetition of Shemana Esrei, Rav Reuven notices that Rav Shimon, the host rabbi, he noticed that he, in the middle of Chazar Sashatz, he took off his tefillin and he put on tefillin Rabbeinu Tam, which the Mishnah Berurah says is not a good thing to do, like during Chazar Sashatz. You must be busy putting on your Rabbeinu Tam tefillin during Chazar Sashatz. So Rav Reuven said, I have a mitzvah of rebuke. So afterwards he goes to Rav Shimon, his host, and says, "Listen, I notice you putting on your Vedatan filling. You're not supposed to do that. It's not proper. So why are you doing that? Why'd you do that?" So Rav Shimon, the host, says, "I'll tell you. Yeah, because there's a certain Hasidish group, and they are knowing like this. And I decided to take up. I follow that inyan that that they do it. So I also do it like them." So Reuven hears that, and he says to the back there, Hashem, and he says, "Hey, Mershaim." So Rav Shimon hears that, and he goes, "How can he talk like that? They're Rishayim, they're wicked people. What's it because they put on their tefillin Vayner Tamer that he calls them wicked? They're this Chassidim." He said, how can he dare talk like that about it? Anyway, he couldn't believe it. It hurt him so much, he decided that he wasn't going to speak to his guest anymore. He was hurt so much that he talked like that. So he gave him the cold shoulder treatment, So after a while, Reuven picked up on like his host not talking to him. So he came up and said, "I don't understand, why aren't you talking to me anymore? Why are you giving me this treatment?" So he said, "I'll tell you why, because I was very hurt by the way you talked. I told you that I'm following this Hasidish group, and you tell me they're Rishayim. How can you talk like that? They're wicked people. I couldn't talk to you anymore." So Reuven says, "What? I said they're Rishayim." He said, "What do you mean? Of course, I heard my own ears. You said that I'm Rishayim." So he's thinking to himself, "Of course, and now I understand. I know it was a misunderstanding." He says, "What? When you're talking about you're following this group, I didn't say Heim Rishayim with an Ayin. I said Heim Rishayim with an Aleph. Lashon, they're Heim Rishayim, they're permitted. In other words, I said the Rishayim means they're permitted to do so because this Chassidus group are following their Rebbe who does it. So they have a right to do that. They're Rishayim, they're permitted to listen because they're following Rebbe. But you're not part of that group." And I was saying, what right do you have to, follow them? You're not part of that Chassidus group. You're not Rishayim. They're Rishayim, and you're not Rishayim. You're not permitted." But he heard Rishayim. He heard it as being wicked. Change the whole picture. It's interesting. Sforno on the pasuk Hanochi Arisi Eskolam Ezeh. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I can't handle these people, the Jewish people. If it's not, what did I give birth to them that I should be able to handle them? And the Sforno points out, we see from here that if a parent really loves his children properly, as he's supposed to, then he can be sure that the kids will do what's right. And he brings here once he got a letter, Zubinstein got a letter from a woman that unfortunately her son was went off the derech and very bad matzav, and he left home, and she wanted to know the right approach, how to deal with the son. You know, should he like lock the door, not let him in, or what should she do? So he said, I'll share with you two stories. And from this, you can understand the right approach, how to deal with your children that unfortunately are going off, or went off. So he said the first story is brought in the Sefer All for the Boss, with Rabbi Yaakov Yosef Herman. As this the story goes, that the Hermans, they took in a boy of Ramallah to be, he was an orphan, and to raise him in their home, as we know, tremendous Bali Chesed. So what happened was the boy Rav Yaakov Yosef, he was very serious in his chinuch, and no messing around. You have to do what's right, and very very serious. And the boy was a little bit too hard, harsh, or much for him. And he got upset, and he told Rav Yaakov Yosef. He said, "Listen," he said, "don't you know I'm a yosom, and you can't treat me like this?" And he says, "That's it. I'm leaving the house." So. All right, he goes, he packs his bag, and he says, "Okay, I got everything back, I'm leaving, goodbye." So, what happened? Herman didn't, you know, like say anything, run after him. He said, "Fine, let him go, wants to go, let him go." So, the boy starts leaving the house, and you can see, notice he's like looking over his shoulder, seeing maybe he's going to call him back, you know. But no, he let him go. So, fine, he goes down to outside, and just is about to, you know, start going, he hears Rabbi Yaakov Yosef call him. He says, "Ramallah, Ramallah, wait. So he goes, "Ah, good, you know, I see he has regret, you know, he's regretting, ah, yeah, good, it worked," you know, the boy thought. Good, and sure enough, he waits. A few minutes later, Yaakov Yosef comes down, and he says, "Here, I made a little pekula for you, some nice goodies, some cakes and cookies, whatever, that you should have on the way, you know, here." And he opens up his wallet, says, "Here, take, you should have some, a little bit of money also on you, here, take some money, whatever," and he gave it to the kid. So, needless to say, he says, a few minutes later, the kid was back home already, and that was the end of that, and he raised the kid to be, he ended up being, until he was married, and ended up being a big Talmud Chacham. But the idea being, what was his approach? His approach is to show the kid love. You don't have to go running after him. Just, okay, show that you love the kid. That's it. You know, see, I love you. I want, here, I'm giving you cookies. I love you. What you do, but I still love you. And that caused the kid to go back. A second story was on the Erev Pesach. There was a mishpacha that, you know, all the tension of Erev Pesach, the cleaning of this. So sometimes the kids, they say, are the Korban Pesach. You know, the kids get the brunt of all the pressure. And in one mishpacha, that's what happened. One of the kids, you know, was treated a little bit too harshly, and he got very upset. And the kid ran out of the house, "I'm leaving, goodbye," and he leaves the house. An Erev Pesach. So fine, so their whole thought, the kid was, "Okay, I'll come back." But it was approaching nighttime, the kid didn't come back. And father went to shul, whatever, comes home to, you know, start the Leila Seder. The kid's still not back. So he waits a few minutes more, whatever, and, you know, finally wants to get started in the Seder, but the kid's not there. So he didn't know what to do. So he then sent a letter to the Gabbai of Letterman, Shul Bnei Brak, which is where they live, and they asked the Gabbai, "Can you speak to the stipler and ask him what to do? Should we wait, start Seder, not start Seder, what should we do?" So he asked the Gabbai, asked the stipler, told him the story, and what's the mishpacha do? The stipler says, "Wait." So that's fine. So he got the message back, said, "Don't start your Seder, you should wait." Okay, so they waited, and still no son. So it's starting to, you know, get late, it's getting late already. So they sent a message back, what should we do? Should we do the Seder? It's almost, you know, we're not going to have much time for the Seder. Should we say? So the stipler says, "Wait." Fine. So they still waited. So they waited a little bit later, sure enough, door opens and the kid walks in. And Baruch Hashem, he's back, happy, whatever. And then they sit down and they do their same. So he explains, he said, what's pshat? What was the stipler's idea over here? He says that by waiting, when the kid comes home, and what does he see? The whole family has been sitting there for 3 hours or whatever, not just doing the Seder, waiting for him. What does that show? That they love him. They're waiting for him. That shows their love for him. And that's what that kid needs. If he would have come and see they're already benching whatever, and he comes in, they don't care about me and this, and they just went about their Seder without, as if I'm nothing, and it would have caused the kid to much break down. It was often because they waited for him that gave him the chizah. So Meili told this woman the same thing, that the proper approach is just to show your, whatever your kid does, number one thing is to show your love. Let's end up one last thing. It's Mice also was talking about the Chinuch. The Chafetz Chaim, there was once a neighbor of the Chafetz Chaim that they had a child who suffered from, they call it Chole Yareach. It's a kid, it's a person, whatever, that they get up in the middle of the night and like sleepwalk, not just sleepwalking, they do crazy things in their sleep. Okay, it's like a sickness. So this neighbor, the Chafetz Chaim, the woman, had this son who had this. She just get up and do all kinds of wild and crazy things, and she couldn't take it, didn't know what to do. So she went to Chafetz Chaim and said, "What should I do?" So Chafetz Chaim said, "Listen, I'm up anyways at night learning whatever. So bring your kid over here, and then I'll watch him. You can sleep and think, because I'm up anyways. Fine." So that's what she does, brings the kid over and goes to sleep, in Chafetz Chaim's place, whatever. And sure enough, one night, the kid gets up, in his sleep, and while he's sleeping, and he, makes his way into the kitchen. Chafetz Chaim, noticing him, with the corner of his eye, he goes to the kitchen, and he comes out of the kitchen with a knife in his hand. And the Chafetz Chaim says, uh-oh, he takes his knife, and this is all in his sleep, And the kid, what does he do? He looks around there, and he goes, and he heads over to the bookshelf. And he takes a knife and he starts cutting the binding of the shas. Goes to the Mesechus Brachos, slices it in half. Goes to the Mesechus Shabbos, slices it in half. He starts slicing all the bindings, all the books, all the svarim, all the shas. So Chafetz Chaim didn't want to wake him. He said, Kezel Shena, I don't want to wake up the kid, So he watched him and he didn't do anything. He didn't wake him. He just let him continue what he was doing. So after the kid finished that, he's looking around. So next thing is, he went, all in sleep, he went into the room where the baby was sleeping with the knife in his hand. Okay, so now already Chafetz Chaim says, Ad Khan, it's gone too far. He wakes, of course, he goes in and he grabs the kid and wakes him up, whatever, takes away the knife, and that was that. So that was a Meister Shahayah. But the Chafetz Chaim took a lesson of Musar from here. The story that happened with himself. He said, took a lesson of Musar. And what was that? He says, unfortunately, you have people that they destroy, they rip Shabbos, they rip Brachas and Shabbos and all the things, they destroy. They're not people, unfortunately, they're destroying the Torah, not keeping Shabbos and Brachas and all these things. But sometimes, you can't say anything. And why? Because they're not going to listen anyway. So what are you going to do? Nothing you can do about it. Not going to listen. What are you going to tell them? Okay? So you have to, unfortunately, watch them as they destroy all these things. He says, however, it's only to a point. When it comes to the children, and it comes to the chinuch of the children already, that's adkan. And when it comes to the child, then you have to say, no matter what, you got to stop them. When it comes to destroying the children, next generation, that you got to say, put an end. It's a Shem. Should see an end of all the Chilul Hashem and Chilul Torah, and we should see everybody come to the Torah and keep the Torah in the right way, in the proper way. We shall be Zoicha to coming of Mashiach Tzidkenu, you hear me, Yameinu, from me. Mm-hmm.